Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Good evening, Khuyanand Mulweni, and a hearty welcome to the Shahida Kali show. Well, of course, I'm Shahida Kali, and tonight I speak again with Professor Christine Lochner, who is the co-director at the MRC Unit on Anxiety and Stress Disorders, Department of Psychiatry at the University of Stellenbosch. And tonight our focus is going to be obsessive compulsive disorder, and we'll chat more about it. It's often commonly referred to as OCD. But let me first greet the professor, Professor Christine Lochner. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Hello, Shahida. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to speak about obsessive compulsive disorder because it's actually so prevalent in the community. But I think it is one of those disorders that are often hidden because people feel so bad about having obsessive compulsive disorder. So perhaps first to start off by asking, you know, what is OCD? If you can please just chat a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a good starting point, Shahida. As you said, it's quite common. It's the fourth most common psychiatric condition after depression, substance abuse, and phobia. So it's very, very prevalent. About 2 to 3% of our population would currently have obsessive compulsive disorder. So just to answer your question, what it is. As I said, it is a psychiatric condition, and it is characterized by time-consuming, persistent, intrusive thoughts or thought images, and it's usually associated with repetitive behavior, repetitive, time-consuming behavior. So to give an example, it would be someone with an obsession about cleanliness, or dirt, or germs, you know, or a terrible disgust with those kinds of things. And then once they think that they've touched something which is contaminated, they would go on and wash their hands repeatedly, you know, to the point where it's excessive and, you know, it could actually harm their skin, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, we all have rituals. I think this is very important. I think we all have rituals, whether it is cultural or religious or just of our own person. We all have things we have to do in a certain way, and those are not, you know, it's not OCD. Mm-hmm. But when you have these little rituals, which is irrational, it's time-consuming, it causes you distress, it interferes with your functioning or with your relationship, then there is probably reason to worry that there might be OCD.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to kind of speak a little bit about, if you, and I want to take some of the examples that you've used in terms of the symptoms that we can see. So you'd mentioned time-consuming behaviors, you know, that are repetitive, so people repeat it over and over. And perhaps just to speak a little bit about, when we're saying time-consuming, you know, what exactly are we talking about? You know, and I'd like for you to speak about the example of someone can shower up to an hour and a half, 2 hours long. But to speak about the different types of repetitive or obsessive behavior and the types of times, you know, time constraints that, that we're talking about.
Well, it can vary. I think it is very important to note that, you know, you have people with mild OCD who take up to an hour a day, you know, doing rituals like checking or repetitive praying or repeating certain words or counting, you know, those kinds of things. And then you have people who are busy with it more than 8 hours a day. So, in answer to your comment about how it manifests differently, you know, OCD symptoms, it can manifest in different ways in different people. And also most people have a combination of these. You know that, you know, most people are not only washers or checkers. They often have these things in combination. So to give you an example, you know, we talk about OCD symptom dimensions. Mm-hmm. And those are, you know, if I can mention a few of those dimensions, you know, some people worry about harm happening to themselves or to other people. And then they would have these intrusive, violent thoughts or intrusive thoughts about bad things happening to people close to them. And remember, this is not post-traumatic stress disorder. This is something totally different, where they probably haven't been a trauma, but these intrusive thoughts come up, you know, of blood, of guts, of motor accidents, you know, that kind of bad thing, those kinds of bad things happening, and it's usually followed by checking, repeated reassurance seeking that things are okay. So that's a harm-related one. And then you have people presenting with sexual or religious obsessions, you know, intrusive thoughts about sex with people they don't know, or with children, or with animals. You know, all of those things are intrusive. It's there and they don't want to have it, and it's usually associated with repetitive praying or repeating certain mantras or words over and over to make themselves feel better.
All right.
So just to return to that definition, the compulsions usually are aimed at relieving the anxiety caused by the obsession.
Right, and I'd like to speak more about that. Professor, we have to take commercial news. When we come back, I'd like for you to just explain a little bit what you would mean and how it would feel when there are intrusive thoughts. What, you know, how does one understand intrusive, and also the term that you used, checking behavior, what that would mean, so that our listeners can have clarity in terms of what it is that you're describing when you use those words. But let's just stay with us while we are taking the commercial news.
Live from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape.
Welcome back. I'm Shahida Kali, and I'm speaking with Professor Christine Lochner, who is the co-director at MRC Unit on Anxiety and Stress Disorders, Department of Psychiatry at the University of Stellenbosch. We're talking about obsessive-compulsive disorder, commonly referred to as OCD. Professor, just to revisit, you know, you described intrusive thoughts and checking behavior. Perhaps some examples, or just for our listeners to understand what is meant by saying that the thoughts are intrusive. Please.
It's a very important concept. You know, we all have thoughts that are unwelcome. Every now and then you have an intrusive image, which means it is unwelcome, it is disturbing. In other words, it leads to emotions like anxiety or fear, even. And it's contrary to who you are, I would say. Or it's contrary to what you believe in, or what you believe a good person should have. For instance, a good person will not have a thought about harming their mother, you know. Some of these, you know, sometimes someone with OCD would have a thought of harming their own babies. You know, a new mother might have an intrusive thought about harming her newborn baby, you know. And I think for all of us, that it sounds terrible, you know. It's totally unacceptable. It's contrary to what you want. But, and that's why I call it intrusive, you know, and it's labeled as such in the diagnostic manuals. So it is intrusive, so you don't want it, so you want it out as mm-hmm. as good as you can. And that usually leads to behaviors which you think might alleviate the anxiety, you know, mm-hmm. such as praying or hand washing or whatever, mm-hmm. or checking. For instance, if you have these fears about bad things happening, you know, your house burning down if you leave the lights on or the stove on, that kind of thing. So checking would refer to going back, you know, and checking, actually making sure that things are off. You know, the electricity is off or the power switch is off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a patient once who just never arrived at work because she would leave, and then she would think that, did I really close the garage door?
Yeah.
And then she would drive back all the way in the traffic, and once she gets home, she sees, okay, it is closed, and then she leaves again. And within 5 minutes, she thinks, okay, did I close it? And then the danger of leaving it open is so big in her mind that she has to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And once she's there and she's checked, her anxiety is sort of, it's fine, it's under control, and it starts again as soon as she reaches work.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a typical checking behavior.
Yeah, and I think one of the checking behaviors that I often see with religious content within the Muslim community with whom we are speaking mostly tonight is with the ablution ritual. So there'll be, I'm taking ablution in preparation for prayer. Yeah. Halfway through, it's like, did I wash my hands properly? Did I do this correctly, because God will not accept it from me if it's done incorrectly, then I start all over again. And I think, you know, for our listeners to know that you'd start from the start again. When, you know, usually it's not picked up from, you know, where they think it's, you know, perhaps I made a mistake here, so I'll pick up kind of halfway. You know, usually it started from the start, and hence the time consumption in this type of behavior, which, wow, I really think. And one of the things I'd like for you to speak about is how stubborn OCD can be. Yeah. Oh, my word, I think it's one of the, I'd like to call it stubborn. It's just one of the most stubborn psychiatric disorders to treat or to work with, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's so hard. It's really hard. Because, you know, some people, there's always ambivalence. You know, do they want to get better? Because I had someone on Friday tell me,
yes,
you know, they don't know what is part of their personality and what is OCD. So
right.
Once you start with treatment,
yeah,
you know, are you losing a bit of yourself? Are you losing, you know, and some people with these religious worries,
yes,
they think once they lose that, or once they stop caring about it, they might become a-religious. You know,
absolutely,
or atheist.
Absolutely.
So, you know, are they going for treatment or not?
Yeah. So there's almost a guilt in seeking out treatment, especially if it's religious content, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I've seen that as well.
Yeah.
I've seen it as well. There's such, it needs such a lot of reassurance. I mean, you know, constantly just the concept of, but God is merciful. But mm-hmm. Of course, we know that we have to understand it much deeper than that.
Yeah.
I just would want for you to also speak about the fact that sometimes these beliefs are so irrational that it borderlines at times psychosis.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, in OCD, you have a subtype, which we now call poor insight OCD. It's where you lose the ability to sort of distinguish between what is really, really irrational and what is, you know, what is rational.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds quite abstract, but if I can use an example...
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people, I think most people with OCD, they do realize that their habits or their compulsions and their obsessions are irrational. You know, it's even though they do it and they, you know, they believe in it at the moment and it's good, at some level they can tell you, you know, they do know if they open a door and they actually touch the doorknob, it's fine. They won't get AIDS, or they won't be HIV positive after shaking hands with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and rationally they know this, and they say, okay, but I know it's not possible, but there's some, you know, thought that what if, or maybe. But then there's a type of OCD patient where that insight has gone, where they actually believe. I had a lady who saw me, she didn't bath anymore. She just didn't see herself because she believed that she is losing, you know, if she gets into the bath, she believed that she was washing off goodness. mm-hmm. and that once the plug is pulled, or the that a part of her goodness will go down the drain.
Yes,
you know, and that becomes a little bit odd. That's odd, you know.
Yeah.
And she wavered a bit, you know. She said, you know, at some level she knows it may not be true, but she doubt, you know, she had doubt. So there's definite, you know, worry about psychosis.
Yeah.
And also, if you think about psychotic patients, mm-hmm. you know, they often have rituals. So you, in schizophrenia,
yes.
you may also develop comorbid OCD, which yeah. means you might have obsessions or compulsions with the schizophrenia.
Absolutely.
Fascinating.
It is really, really fascinating and so interesting. We have to take commercial news. When we come back, I'd like for us to speak more about it. I have such an example of a lady who has OCD and would believe that there would the possibility of HIV could yeah. be in the chicken, and her husband would buy the chicken and she will just constantly throw it away because she couldn't bear the thought that there was the possibility there could be the HIV germ or virus in the chicken. The same lady you would have a closed packet of biscuits.
Yeah.
And she would believe there are germs in that packet, and try as we did to try and get her sometimes even to touch the packets, you know, on the outside. It would be so frightening.
Oh, and it's so sad, you know.
It really is very sad.
Someone who does this on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a nightmare.
It really is. And the sadness is how sad it often makes the people who are affected by it and also the family members. But let's take that commercial news when we come back.
Live from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape.
Welcome back. I'm Shahida Kali and I'm speaking with Professor Christine Lochner. Our focus is OCD, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. Perhaps just to speak about that OCD is primarily driven by fear and anxiety. And I'm particularly wanting for you to speak about that, Professor, because when you're looking at religious content, I often... You know, like I've seen children with OCD already, and yeah. then you have the hectic teaching of God will punish you, and you need to make do the thing right, and you need to pray this way. And I, you know, often think us as parents or us as carers and teachers need to be very mindful what we're instilling in the child and how this can actually build up to excessive or the anxiety and the fear that can actually lead to or contribute to the formation of OCD. Please, will you share your views?
Shahida, yeah, I think it's a very important topic, and I haven't thought about it very much, you know. Coming from a religious background that is not so, you know, incredibly ritual-driven. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, it depends on the person. You know, most children will go through all of those teachings and strict rules, you know, without too much drama, but there are more sensitive children.
Yes.
And especially for those, you have to be mindful, you know, and careful about what you teach and what you say, because mm-hmm. OCD is a condition you know, if you think about the causes of it, you know, even though it's multifactorial, you know, we know there is perhaps truth in the fact that parents can perhaps lead to or instill OCD in children, mm-hmm. you know, obviously in combination with a whole lot of other things. But
yeah.
I think if a child is at risk, in other words, maybe there is a genetic loading, he's more at risk to develop OCD,
yes.
then an overly strict parent and teachings might just sort of trigger that underlying condition.
Yeah.
So one has to be very, very careful and responsible and very mindful
mm-hmm.
That overly strict rules might just, you know, reinforce this in children.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Perhaps just also to speak about, while we're talking about children, is there an age range in which OCD appeared to be more prevalent or present itself? And even gender, do you have any information mm-hmm. on that?
Yeah, usually it's interesting. Boys tend to develop it early, at an earlier age.
Mm-hmm.
And you very often see that boys, if they have OCD, they may also present with comorbid tics. Now, comorbid meaning it just presents at the same time as
yes.
the OCD. And then tics refer to those sudden, rapid, almost involuntary, either motor movements or verbal utterings,
uh-huh.
you know, like to cough or to sniff
mm-hmm.
or to say a word, but involuntarily.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating. So boys tend to develop OCD to present with OCD at an earlier age and often with those tics. You know, often you see those eyes knip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or a shoulder that shrugs, that
yes.
kind of thing.
Yes.
Whereas in girls, it tends to develop more towards puberty.
Yeah.
But in adulthood, you would probably have the gender ratio would be 1:1. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know same prevalence in males than in females, which is interesting.
Yeah, I find OCD very, very interesting myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I often find if we're thinking of obsessive or we're thinking of much, you know, intensity, intenseness and so on,
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of interested whether there is extremely strict stuff or fanaticism or somewhere do you find, you know, those types of elements present? And again, if you think even sexual content of OCD and religious content, but cleanliness as well, kind of by the way connected. If you listen to some of the teachings and how it's sometimes presented, but then you have, you know, in certain societies where sexual activity before marriage also is absolutely practiced. And are these contributing little factors, you know, especially when ladies, for example, I'm talking about ladies whom I've seen in practice, older ladies who has never had any interaction with any person of the opposite gender or so, and how the thoughts, you know, could come about. And sure, it's just very interesting. And therefore, my question of, do you see the shame and the guilt very often prevalent with someone who has OCD and therefore often hides it?
Mm. You know, OCD is known as a hidden illness. You know,
right.
it's one of the biggest secrets.
Yes.
Because I find that, and I'm sure you've seen this in your practice, that mostly the people who develop OCD or who present with OCD are, well, supposed to be high-functioning, quite intelligent people
mm-hmm.
with a lot of potential. You know, I see with usually the kids who come, they are bright kids,
yes.
you know, and very often they are first in class, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question or to reply to that section on the guilt, I think the guilt and the shame, it's with everyone, firstly, because the illness, I mean, it's still very, very much stigmatized. You know, people feel ashamed of having these intrusive thoughts, and they are very fearful that people might think that they are crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that they have lost their minds and that they are crazy to do all of these things. You know, who in their right minds would wash their hands for 2 or 3 or 4 hours a day?
Yes.
So in that regard, definite shame. Mm-hmm. But I think the guilt feelings that goes with inappropriate or vulgar or inappropriate sexual thoughts or inappropriate religious thoughts and rituals, you know, I think there the guilt is quite prominent. And can cause major distress and major impairment because very often it's hidden and they don't discuss or, you know, they don't talk it through with anyone. They feel so ashamed. So they never seek help.
And may I ask you to speak about the fact that it, you know, it is also one of the disorders that are so misunderstood. So there is often much pressure from family members that the person must just get better. Just get better. Just stop it. You know, that type of responses.
Absolutely. You know, and it's so not right because if the person could have done so, they would. You know, if you think about the you know, anyone out there with OCD would be able to tell you how distressing it is because you can't actually switch off your mind.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that stands out whenever I speak to someone with OCD is the absolute exhaustion by the end of the day because they have to deal with these thoughts 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it pops up when they're eating, when they're doing their work, but in general, it's there all of the time.
Yeah.
So they can't really, you know, there's sort of an ongoing conversation in their mind while they actually live their life. Which is, you know, it's terrible.
It really is terrible. It, you know,
and for family to actually blame them or to tell them to you know, to get on with it and just pull up their socks. It's, I think that's cruel.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you're mentioning it because very often it is believed that the person who has OCD can just decide to stop it.
Or they can pray about it.
Yeah,
you know, I've seen there are religious people who believe that if they pray enough, or if they pray enough for their family member with their condition, it will go away. And, you know, and once you go on that path, it becomes very difficult because if the person doesn't get better, then did you pray enough?
Exactly.
Is the person not trying hard enough?
Yeah, and it holds the assumption of badness even to the person themselves. It's like if I haven't, it just seems as if I'm not praying hard enough, and therefore it makes me bad. It takes away the goodness of me.
Shaira, I think that is important because you know, and that leads to very problematic dynamics in the family or in the marriage.
Yeah,
and that causes a lot of stress. Now the problem with stress is it increases the severity of OCD.
Absolutely, and that was going to be my next question. Yeah. Please speak about it.
You will see this. I'm sure you've seen it in your practice.
Yeah,
that
I
in
do.
Exam time, you know, people with OCD, they tend to get worse.
Yes.
They tend to have a lot of problems concentrating.
Right.
Their mood goes down. They're super anxious. And they might even develop more intrusive thoughts or rituals. So it's relationship distress, you know, marital discord, that kind of thing. That may also increase the OCD severity. So stress is never a good thing.
Yeah, and stress certainly does impact on it. I just would also like to mention the fact that sometimes the content of the OCD also changes. So if I washed hands, you know, at this stage, in a month or two's time, it could have shifted to another fear or another anxiety, and it just makes it so much more difficult to treat. I want to come back to the question of, are there any other psychiatric disorders related to OCD? You've mentioned psychosis, you've mentioned mood. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, what is you would probably expect that, given the impairment mm-hmm. and the distress that goes with OCD, you would expect the person to develop depression sometime yes. during their illness. So,
yeah.
so depression, I would say about 70 to 80% of people with OCD will develop clinically significant depression.
Absolutely.
At some stage. You know,
yes.
their mood will definitely go down.
Yes.
Meaning, you know, if you talk about depression, it means their energy, their sleeping patterns, mm-hmm. their eating patterns, everything about that will be affected.
Mm-hmm.
But then OCD is in a category in our diagnostic manual with conditions such as, interesting conditions, such as hair pulling disorder,
yeah.
Trichotillomania, where
yes.
you have those rituals about pulling out hair.
Yeah.
Which you don't want because it leads to thinner hair or
right.
bald spots, that kind of thing. The other condition in that category is skin picking disorder, where you would scratch your skin to the point where there are lesions or
yes.
A lot of marks, that kind of thing. And then another condition would be hoarding disorder, where you obsessively or
right.
compulsively collect things and you can't throw away, to the point where your place is really cluttered.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one in that category of our DSM or the diagnostic manual is what we call body dysmorphic disorder,
mm-hmm.
which used to be in a totally different class of our diagnostic
yeah.
manual. But anyhow, now nowadays, all of those are clumped together because of overlapping symptoms,
yes.
such as, you know, these obsessions and then little
right.
behavioral rituals.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You have a question that we wanted to speak about was whether there are any telltale signs mm-hmm. if someone has OCD, and the reason for asking this question is, you know, you are in a process of research, and
yeah.
so that people can identify, oh my goodness, you know, do I have OCD
mm-hmm.
or someone that I know? Yeah,
yeah.
Please.
Okay. Well, if you are someone with these intrusive thoughts, and remember that we all have intrusive thoughts, right? Every now and then you see something that you really don't want to, and you wonder, what on earth was that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
But if you see that you, or if you realize that you actually spend a lot of time, you know, an hour plus. So take that as a cutoff. If you spend an hour plus on senseless, irrational
yes.
behaviors, which is not constructive. In
mm-hmm.
other words, it's not aimed at anything except making you feel better.
Right.
Then you must realize that there may be reason to believe that you've got OCD.
Yeah.
But if you look at your at family members or colleagues around you, or even patients, you know, if you see a washer, you
mm-hmm.
would probably notice red or very pink hands
mm-hmm.
or pulses, or even the whole forearm
yeah.
might be red,
yeah.
and in some cases the hands can be bleeding.
Yes.
And it might be because of their excessive washing, and
yes.
washing with harsh soaps or Vick
right.
or Handy Andy or mm-hmm. whatever. With the checkers, usually they are late for
yeah.
everything
yeah.
because they always have to go back to check, or they have to, you know, the other day I saw a lady who has to get up at 4 every day
yes.
in order to be at work at 8 o'clock. And I mean,
yeah.
she doesn't have children, she doesn't have a husband. So
yeah.
what does she do from 4 until 8? And
yeah.
it's all of those rituals
yeah.
Around either washing or checking, going back, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Also, I think someone with OCD may be prone to repeated reassurance seeking, you know,
yeah.
am I clean? Am I forgiven?
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay? Am I allowed to do this? You know, all of those questions. If your child starts asking you all of these questions,
yeah.
Or your husband or your wife, then you have to, you know, you have to notice these things.
Yes.
It's not just innocent reassurance seeking.
Yeah.
It's probably one of those rituals, you know, and it's a ritual aimed at feeling better or anxiety reduction.
Right. And I think, you know, on that, really just to tell our listeners, particularly when you're seeing it in children, and you said boys often start younger, that help must be sought for these children sooner rather than later, so that it there is the prevention of it becoming severe cases of OCD. I almost would like to jump. I know that we have to take commercial news. Then I'd like to go to your research and what you're looking for, and rather come back to OCD after that, because I would like that we focus on the research component and the purpose of this interview that we're having with you at the moment. So let's just take the commercial news and stay with us.
Live from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape.
Back. I'm Shahida Kali, and I'm speaking with Professor Christine Lochner, who is the co-director at the MRC Unit on Anxiety and Stress Disorders at the Department of Psychiatry and the University of Stellenbosch. We're talking about OCD, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. Perhaps just to go to your research that you're doing, and part of the purpose of this interview, what your thoughts are behind that, please, Professor.
OCD remains an incredibly interesting disorder. So this research that we're doing, we aim to learn as much as we can about OCD, but also OCD-related conditions such as hair pulling disorder. I just mentioned that it falls into the same category, even though there are differences. So what we're doing is we have different groups that we compare with one another. You know, firstly OCD, we compare it with healthy controls, just to see how it differs, these people differ, how they present differently. Mm-hmm. And then a third group would be the hair pulling disorder.
Yes.
But we also have two other cohorts that we've recently added. One is gambling disorder.
Okay.
And this is a topic for another day.
Yes.
And the other group would be tick, people who are currently using tick.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. It's fascinating. You know, so there's nowadays the talk of a spectrum of conditions, from impulsive to compulsive.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these conditions fall somewhere along that spectrum.
Yes.
But anyhow, just to summarize the research, is firstly, you know, we're collaborating with researchers from other research institutions at Cambridge as well. And basically, we aim to investigate the structure and the functioning of specific brain areas in these patients.
Okay.
And then secondly, the study also aims to identify the genes that may increase the risk for the development of these conditions.
Okay.
So it sounds incredibly complex, but basically it entails a once-off interview with me or a colleague, where I would ask you, the person, terrible lot of questions on OCD and whether they have comorbid conditions and how it impacts on their lives. You know, it's a very comprehensive clinical interview, and we also draw blood at that time for the DNA extraction. You know, we look at genetics.
Yes.
And then at a second session, if the person does qualify, we do MRI scan, we do neuropsychological testing, just to see how their decision making is, how impulsive they are, that kind of thing. And you know, it doesn't include a treatment component. So very importantly, you know, we love for people to participate, but it's basically for their love of research or for their hope to contribute to what we know about OCD so that we actually can help future generations. So even though the interview might not help the participant at this stage, it might in future help others.
Someone else. I just would like to ask whether there's any particular criteria in terms of age or gender.
Adults, 18 to whenever.
Okay.
But for the imaging component, we would obviously like our patients to be a little bit younger, you know, somewhere between 18 and 55, more or less.
Okay. All right. Okay. It's very interesting, and I think the genetics play, you know, an interesting part of the research, I would imagine, because I've seen a little boy who presented with OCD, and when I did the interview and information, you know, gathering, discovered that the father had OCD as well.
Yes.
So it's very interesting to look at it from a genetic perspective, and also the background of mental illness, you know, in the history of the person.
Absolutely.
In terms of family members.
Yeah.
So again, who would people contact if they would make themselves available to be a part of the research?
Yeah, I think, you know, email is always a good start.
Mm-hmm.
And they can email me directly on cl2@fun.ac.za.
Yes.
In other words, my initials and the number 2@fun.ac.za.
Yeah.
Or they can call our Mental Health Information Center,
mm-hmm.
which is just in the office right next to mine. They know about our work and they will take these messages.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be 021-938-9229.
Okay, I've got that, and I'm going to repeat it, you know, when we conclude this discussion, I will repeat that as well. So perhaps just to come back to, what would be the period that would be involved when people make themselves available for the research?
You know, it's up to the caller, up to the participant. You
mm-hmm.
know, I will make, usually I prefer these interviews to be in the morning sometime.
Yes.
And the imaging and the neuropsychological assessment is usually on a second day, you know, either it's usually a week apart or 2 weeks apart. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of how it suits the participant.
So it's basically two interactions, if one has to put it that way. The one would be the in-depth interview, the next would be the scan, etc., that will be taken.
Yeah.
Okay, but do you give feedback to the participant in terms of this is what we found or something like that?
I do usually, you know,
because that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So a person gets to know what's going on a little bit more with themselves.
Very important. And I think, you know, from what I've gathered from participants is that they usually enjoy participating. You know, when do you get someone who will listen to you for 3 hours on end and you don't have to pay a cent? It's actually quite I think most people find it nice because you will ask them questions that they haven't been asked before.
Yeah.
And very often we have participants who have not been diagnosed. So that's not, you know, prerequisite for participation.
Okay.
You don't have to know that you have OCD.
Yeah.
You
can, and I would imagine part of the good feeling moments in this interview would be, oh my word, now I understand this and that better about myself. So there's almost affirmation of, you know, this is a part of a disorder, and because of the guilt and the shame that people will experience and the feeling of I'm bad. I'm sure your interview would probably have someone leaving from there thinking, oh my goodness, you know, there's credibility almost to what I've been going through. And
it's not because I'm a bad person.
Not because
I've got a diagnosable condition that can be treated and it's okay. I'm actually okay.
Yeah, and I think the hopefulness, you know, of it can be treated, it must be the biggest gift that people can receive, and also to give feedback to their family to say, do you know, I have this diagnosis, and suddenly it makes such a lot of sense. But we need to take commercial news. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the condition called OCD, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder.
Stay down. This is the Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape.
Welcome back. I'm Shahida Kali and I'm speaking with Professor Christine Lochner. I have a question that I think many people might want to ask. The MRI scan. So often people will say, oh my word, will it hurt? That's my question. Will it be sore? Am I supposed to be scared?
only if you are severely overweight. Because the scanner is quite narrow.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have claustrophobia, it's definitely not a good candidate for MRI scanning.
Mm-hmm.
But so other than that, it's really painless. It is actually quite... it's quite calm. Mm-hmm. You don't get lie in there. It's quite noisy, though.
Yeah.
But you can request that the light be switched off.
Yes.
And you've got your little panic button in your hand. So if you do get anxious and you want to get out, you can.
Yeah. And do they put headsets on with music that you listen to the music?
Yes, they put headsets on and you just lie there for an hour and a bit.
Yeah.
And it's not sore. They don't inject you with anything.
Yeah.
It's not damaging. It's really no mess, no fuss.
I suppose if one can describe it, you know, to people, it's you're lying there very quietly so that a machine can take photos of your brain.
That's exactly what it is. It's one giant magnet.
Yeah.
So take off all metals as far as possible.
Yes.
And it's really the only irritation is the loud banging noises.
The noise,
but that's it.
Yeah, but it's still bearable. I think, you know, if coming from me who's been for an MRI scan so that people can know, it's actually bearable, especially when you prepare yourself. This is going to be a loud noise, but you will have, you know, these headsets on your ears and you listen to the music and it's okay. It's just the noise. It holds nothing to be scared of or frightened of. Perhaps another question I want to, goodness, in the little time that I have over. You did say that OCD is treatable.
Mm.
Very briefly, what would that entail?
Well, I would say...
Or include.
Sorry?
Or include.
You know, firstly, you have to say that, as you said, in the way in the beginning, it is a difficult disorder. It is a sticky thing. So treatment, it's intensive, it's difficult, it's often time-consuming, it might take, you know, quite a number of sessions,
mm-hmm.
It will take a lot of energy, it will take a lot of commitment from everyone, so don't go into it half-heartedly. So and it's usually a three-way approach. Firstly, the psychoeducation that goes with any type of treatment. Basically, it's where the patient gets taught, you know, you have OCD, and they learn about all the symptoms, and also the family, you know, they get to know what this is about and what to expect, and this is not your family member that is, you know, crazy. It's a treatable condition that, so that takes sort of the Dali Angel Adi Arons Ake.
Yeah.
The Dali Angel Adi Saka. As soon as you can label something, you can sort of manage it.
Right.
And secondly, there is the possibility of a type of psychotherapy, which is called cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very specific kind of CBT, which we call exposure and response prevention.
Yes.
You know, basically the person gets exposed to what they fear, for instance, you know, the dirt or the germs, that kind of thing, and then they must refrain from doing their ritual. So, so you can understand how distressing the treatment can be.
Yep.
But it's a gradual thing, and it's a therapist-assisted thing. So it's not flooding where the person is sort of overwhelmed by by these stimuli. It's a gradual thing, and it gets you, and the patient is prepared for it. You know, it's not as if it's sprung on them.
That's
the psychotherapy part, and that's usually, I think, it's good for everyone. Especially for mild OCD where medication is not indicated yet. And then, so the third leg would be medication. And there we usually, you know, the first line of defense is an SSRI. Usually an SSRI refers to a serotonin reuptake inhibitor or as it is commonly known, as an antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually a higher dose than what you would find in depression or panic disorder or social anxiety disorder.
Yes.
So it's a, so there is medication available.
Right.
However, half of patients would respond to the first trial and half not. So then, you know, once you don't respond, then there are other options like increasing the dosage or switching to another SSRI, or maybe adding a dopaminergic drug. So, so there are many, 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 many options. And then you can also, nowadays, you know, there are treatment groups. For instance, I know there's an active OCD support group meeting on a monthly basis in Sea Point. And then there is online groups. So it's really the world out there is a much better place nowadays than it used to be.
Christine, thank you so much. Unfortunately, I have to conclude the program because within a few seconds, we'll have to go into the news at 10. I just would like to say thank you very, very much. The contact details of yours after the news at 10. Thank you so much for being a part of the program and good evening.
Thank you so much, Shaira, and you're very welcome.
Okay, and so now we go to the news at 10. And I will read.